Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
This week marks the second anniversary of the Sandy Hook Elementary School shootings in Newtown, Connecticut, when a man with untreated mental illness killed 27 people, 20 of them young children sitting in classrooms, and then took his own life. The tragedy prompted fierce national and state debates about the problems with the mental health system in America. The National Alliance on Mental Illness released a report this week that finds reforms have stalled since Newtown in Washington and in states like North Carolina. Here to talk about it is Debbie Dehoff with the North Carolina chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Well, Debbie, thanks for being back with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time as always.
Thank you for having me.
A lot to talk about in the mental health world. I do want to start with a note. The second anniversary of the Sandy Hook tragedy is upon us, and we should talk about where we are and what we have learned and what we haven't done since that has happened, especially in terms of mental illness.
I really think that North Carolina has attempted to concentrate on this. We had an excellent conference on it. There were a lot of excitement that followed that. And then the department really did a Creating Safer Schools initiative, which I think has created, I'm not sure it's totally created safer schools, but I think it has created an excitement and an emphasis on the problem. I think, though, what we're still missing are some basics like across-the-board early detection in schools. Such a simple thing. Well, I say simple. Nothing's really simple. If you do detection, you can detect too many kids who may have issues, and then there becomes a winnowing down problem. But better to do the early intervention that can result from early detection. I think the other thing that still remains a challenge for us is making treatment accessible in schools to everybody. That way you bypass the income issues, the economic issues, you bypass transportation for families who everybody works, they can't get to the treatment, have treatment in schools. So I think those challenges still remain before us for Sandy Hook.
And we're having this discussion in an era where school counselors, among other things, have actually been reduced in many cases because they're not part of the classroom, and yet
That's right.
So vital to so many of these kids that have problems.
Yes, I think we really need to watch the cuts to schools. I think we need to really put back in some of the counseling services, the social workers. I'd love to see a social worker in every single school that would make access to treatment non-stigmatized, easy, all of that.
Well, let's move to just a general how we're doing in North Carolina. There's always good news and bad news when you talk about a policy, especially something as important as mental health. We've seen some funding challenges, I guess, is always at the top of the list.
Yes, we really have. We unfortunately lost a battle to have open access to medications this year with a $12 million annualized cut. On the flip side, I always tend to be sort of positive. I had a positive meeting just last night with Deputy Secretary Richard about having a meeting with DMA to move on making changes to that. The law actually said net savings from rebates could be tried first, so it didn't insist that we actually cut access to medications. It was a public hearing, and that was actually pretty positive because it went from a requirement to fail first twice on drugs before you could get the drug that really worked for you. Just think about how that sounds, to only failing first one time on a drug before you have access to the drug that actually works for you. But I think we need to continue to emphasize why that's a rule that makes no sense. It takes people often 10 years to get the drug that works for them. We don't want to mess with that. That's not a place to find savings. We need to look elsewhere for those savings.
We have talked over the years about, and I think when people hear this, the discussion about mental health reform, sometimes their eyes glaze over unless they're involved in the day-to-day operations. Mm-hmm. But can you summarize where do you think that whole process of the structure of the system is as we further consolidate and what some of the challenges are?
Well, it has been a long run of mergers and acquisitions and never-ending change. It has been chaos. But I actually feel hopeful that at this point, I think these public entities that we call managed care organizations are kind of getting the hang of things. I think they've had a learning curve, and I think they're beginning to master that. We really support at the National Alliance on Mental Illness, North Carolina, a public sector, because we feel like it's really the best organizational model to make sure that the hardest to serve people actually get served instead of not get served, or the whole cherry picking argument. So I guess I feel like the public sector really is improving its performance. I think their monitoring abilities are crucial. I think they need to still continue to hammer away at accountability of their providers. You know, we all read the paper and listen to the news, and people are still piling up in the emergency departments. And I think part of that is accountability of the providers need to be responsive, be clinically responsive to the people who need their services. We don't all need to be always calling 911. The police have done an amazing job in their response, but really, it's up to mental health. We should call mental health first. We shouldn't call the police. So I feel like the MCOs, we need to give them more time. We need to increase their accountability. And we don't need to keep making major systems changes like moving DMA off into another zone to reorganize once again. That will take all the energy away from what works with people with mental illness.
I do want to ask you one more challenge that's out there, which is the big debate swirling about Medicaid expansion. How important is that to the folks with mental illness and their family members?
Well, it's terribly important to our folks. You all know the statistics that people with severe mental illness die 25 years before those who don't have that disorder. A lot of it is because their health care is not kicking in. It's because of medical situations. So the more people who have access to health care, the better their life outcomes and quality of life will be. So we're really about people having access to treatment, and that access really comes from health insurance.
Let's talk about some things that are working that we've talked about before. Peer support services, tell us about that and what's exciting about that.
Yeah, I think in times of change and when times are rough, it really helps for people to kind of keep their eye on aspirations and eye on a prize of what we can do better. And I think there are a lot of things. The whole recovery model, which embeds in practitioners and people who live with mental illness, the whole thought that they can have full and productive lives, that they're not condemned to not being able to work forever, that they can have dreams and aspirations. So I think the recovery model, and through that, we often push things like peer support, we call it. And those are individuals who have experience living with mental illness who get training and then who get jobs and get paid like everybody else to do a service job. Some of these peer supports are embedded in certain like ACT teams, assertive community treatment teams or community support teams, and others simply do almost like a case management type of role, a navigator role. And I think that's full of hope and excitement for the future. I think it does so many things. I think it helps people in their recovery, and it helps them help other people in their recovery, which is the bottom line. Plus, it's cost effective. It's certainly cheaper than an ACT team, and it might be very effective for the person who's in need of that. So I think those are exciting things that we can look forward to. Another thing that really gets me excited is the whole science that's emerging about first episode psychosis. Again, mental illness often strikes right during the college years, 18 to 25, and whole lives are changed. And if it takes that 10 years to find the medication mix, that's not good for that individual. So first episode psychosis is a way that we can save a whole generation of people by intervening with the right service mix. Right now, we've got one program at UNC Chapel Hill called OASIS, and there are two more that are being funded on this 5% set aside from the federal block grant money. The feds are requiring that there be an emphasis on prevention. Think how great that is. That's just great to emphasize prevention. So they'll be funding a program in Raleigh through Alliance Managed Care Organization and also one at Coastal Care. But still, that's just three in North Carolina. We should have a push to have these in every community so that we can intervene early and basically stop the progression of the disease through the right science and the right intervention at the right time.
When we first started talking to you, it's been several years ago, mm-hmm. we talked a little bit about the status of the stigma of mental illness. It feels like there's been a lot of progress. The discussion now is how to treat people and how to understand people. And it wasn't too many years ago when you would hear a lot of different comments, not so positive, even in the legislative halls.
I'm thrilled that you've noticed that because I've noticed it too. I think part of the challenge is just to get the talk going all the time. If you talk the talk and talk about mental illness. That's the best thing for dealing with people's fear, because they get past the fear, they get to the information, they want to be helpful. Yeah, I think our NAMI walk, I think we've done a lot of things to help with that at the National Alliance on Mental Illness, but it's more than that. It's in the paper all the time. We, I think, have even brought about an awareness for people in prison who have mental illness, who need to be treated as human beings and need to be treated with protection of their human rights, and the fact that some of their behaviors may have stemmed from the mental illness and not from criminal intent.
Before I let you go, I have to note that you are retiring as the head of NAMI North Carolina. What are your thoughts as you come to the end of your tenure, and what are your hopes for the future?
Well, my thoughts are there's still a lot of work to do in the mental health world, and I, again, hope for some stability and some leadership that will bring about the continued emphasis that we need and continued funding. You know, to be honest, we really could use some additional state dollars for services. So there's still a lot of work to be done for the people who come after me, and I'll leave them to it.
Well, thank you very much for all you've done for so long. We really appreciate you being with us. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chris.
Up next, the lessons from the November election and what to expect in the next General Assembly. Stay tuned.